Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Lauder Podcast. My name is Edward, and today I'll be talking with Luis Gonzalez, a member of Lauder's class of 1998. Luis is co-CEO and co-founder of Vitalink, the leading pharmacy benefit management company in Brazil. In addition to overseeing the operations, technology, finance, and administrative areas of the company, Luis is also responsible for investor relations, having raised capital from financial and strategic investors. Prior to Vitalink, Luis was a founding member of the Boston Consulting Group's Sao Paulo office. Prior to attending the Lauder Institute, Luis received a degree in industrial engineering from West Virginia University.
Luis, from West Virginia. How are you today?
Very good. Thanks. Yourself?
I'm pretty good. You're down in Brazil?
Correct. I'm in Sao Paulo.
Okay. So it's you're an hour ahead, right? Down there?
Right now it's an hour, and a couple of weeks it's going to be two.
Yeah, exactly, with the strange time changes that we now have. So
exactly.
So let's just talk a little bit about your background before you graduated from Lauder, before you came to Lauder. What sort of international experience did you bring with you?
Okay, well, I'll start back to my family. I was born in the U.S., but my parents are Colombian. They had immigrated to the U.S. as graduate students, where they ended up becoming college professors. By the age of about 16, I lived a year in Spain and in Colombia on two occasions for a total of 5 years. So as a child and as a teenager, I lived abroad quite a bit when my parents were studying or working outside of the U.S. But in terms of international business experience, it really began after I graduated. I graduated with a degree in industrial engineering from West Virginia University and entered the field of management consulting. And in management consulting, I did obviously in several projects in the U.S., the majority of my projects were South American-focused. So I had the chance to live and work on projects for a year in Argentina. Traveled for about 2 years continuously to Mexico, worked on a project in Chile. So I had a great deal of Latin American experience, but all of those experiences were outside of Brazil, where I am today.
All Spanish-speaking countries.
Correct.
Yeah. So then you came to Lauder after that, or?
Correct, yes. And then I went to Lauder. I really enjoyed being able to use my Spanish skills outside of the family and for business. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I wanted to obtain an MBA and focus on entrepreneurship and ideally kind of leverage both my cultural background and the desire to become an entrepreneur to eventually set up a company that either, you know, worked with Latin America and the U.S. or within Latin America. And a colleague of mine, the consultant from where I worked, was a Lauder graduate. So that's the person who told me about Lauder. He also did the Portuguese track, which is what I ended up doing. And since I knew that I wanted to be an entrepreneur in Latin America, there was a big hole on the map, which was Brazil. I didn't know the country. I didn't speak the language. So it really made a lot of sense to apply to Lauder and Wharton.
Yeah. And obviously you improved your language skills quite a bit at Lauder. You said you didn't have experience in Portuguese.
It started with zero Portuguese, which if you're a native Spanish speaker, you're allowed to do that. Yeah. Because there's some similarities that get you up to speed. But definitely there's been quite a positive evolution in terms of Portuguese skills.
Yeah.
Or at least I hope that the Lauder staff agrees.
I don't think they'd let you graduate if there wasn't. So when did you graduate from Lauder?
I graduated in 1998.
Okay, so little over 10 years ago. And have you been at the same company since then? Or what did you do post-graduation, I guess I should have phrased that.
Okay. Well, let's start off even with the summer internship.
Sure.
When I was looking for summer internship, I really wanted to continue kind of the immersion of the first year in Lauder and ideally work in Brazil. I didn't really want to go back to consulting, but an interesting opportunity came up, which was to help open the Boston Consulting Group's office in Sao Paulo. So literally after the partner himself, I was the first hire here locally. So it combined my desire to work in Brazil with something entrepreneurial-ish in the sense that, you know, the office didn't exist. So we did everything from rent the office to buy the fax machine to interview the first employee employees, the first local hires, and obviously work on projects. So that was a really interesting opportunity. Then I accepted a job full-time with BCG in Sao Paulo, came back after graduating in 98. And after about a year, the entrepreneurial itch began once again. It was kind of the end of the dot-com bubble. And at that point, I decided to eventually leave BCG, and I joined some friends of mine who were also Lauder grads, and some were Wharton grads, to start a company in late 99. And fortunately, that company is still growing today. So I've been, you know, since late 99 with the company that we started that's called Vitalink, and it's a pharmacy benefits management company in Brazil. And we have CVS Caremark from the U.S. as one of our shareholders.
Wow. So what does Vitalink do?
Vitalink is a pharmacy benefit management company. It's a model that exists in the U.S. that has very high utilization, but most people don't even know that PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers, exist. I didn't know that. I didn't know they existed when I lived in the U.S. But basically, in the U.S., when you have a healthcare plan and you need to buy a prescription drug, you go to a pharmacy such as CVS and you show your healthcare plan card, and you pay a small copay to obtain your prescription drugs. The company that administers that benefit is the pharmacy benefit management company. So that company will negotiate discounts with the pharmaceutical manufacturers, with the pharmacies themselves. Their system will do all the eligibility when you go to the store, and will apply the subsidies that are sponsored either by your employer or by your healthcare plan. And it's a volume business, and basically the PBMs drive volume for manufacturers and for retail pharmacies, and that's one of the reasons money. Then secondly, what they do is very interesting. It's after the sale is actually made, they analyze to see who buys what, so they can identify, you know, people who have diabetes and asthma. People who have diabetes and asthma and to buy prescription drugs. And then the healthcare plan or the employer's healthcare group can develop actions to try to help that person become compliant with their treatment and take their drugs, and therefore drive down their overall healthcare costs. Because let's say if someone has a chronic condition and does not, you know, take their insulin, let's say they're diabetic, they need insulin, they don't take their insulin, they will end up in the hospital. They will end up, you know, not only having a lesser quality of life, but they will also drive up the costs of the healthcare plan of their employer. Mm-hmm. So the idea is, you know, to invest in prevention and subsidize the drug spend and lower healthcare costs and increase productivity.
Very interesting business to be in.
Exactly. In the U.S., over 80% of all prescription drug sales are intermediated by PBMs. So CVS Caremark, which is the result of a merger between CVS Pharmacies and Caremark, the largest PBM in the U.S., does roughly $90 billion worth of business, and they're one of the Fortune top 20 companies right now in the U.S., and half their business comes from that pharmacy benefit management side of the business.
Yeah, the hot topic right now in American politics with healthcare reform and its impacts on the economy. Have you been affected by the current economic conditions?
Yeah, Brazil. Exactly. Brazil was hit pretty hard as a result of the global economic crisis. The stock markets here plummeted in Brazilian reais, and then if you converted that to dollars, it was even worse, because the changes in the exchange rate. However, at the same time, it seems to be recognized as one of the first countries to have bounced back from the crisis. And the Brazilian stock market, the Bovespa, is nearly at what it was at its peak before the crisis. And one of the interesting things, or one of the reasons why Brazil was able to recuperate quickly, was because of a couple factors that some people, in a sense, used to criticize beforehand. Credit is harder to come by, basically, and interest rates are very high. So what that ends up impacting is that, you know, most people are not nearly as in much debt as maybe they are in the U.S. So if people have less debt and the crisis comes along, they don't go bankrupt, and they don't have, you know, the degree of financial troubles that they'd have if they were, you know, financing a house and a couple of cars and so on. So because of that, Brazil was really able to bounce back quite well, and there's a lot of optimism here. There was, you know, job losses and so on. Many of the multinational companies kind of put a freeze on new investments in the first semester. But overall, it seems to be, you know, consensus that, that Brazil has bounced back relatively well. The real has also appreciated significantly versus the dollar and is back to the levels it was pre-crisis.
That's good. That's very impressive. Just out of curiosity, how does the healthcare system work in Brazil? Is it a single-payer system or a state-run?
Great. No, excellent question. Excellent question, and that's really why we kind of started VitaLink, which is the name of our company here in Brazil. Brazil, in terms of number of people with private healthcare, is the second largest market in the world, the first being the U.S. Europe, most of the healthcare systems are nationalized and public systems. So in terms of private healthcare, Brazil is the second largest. But the big difference between Brazil and the U.S. is that the prescription drugs are not covered by healthcare plans. Here. The only drugs that are covered are for use within the hospitals. So you have a factory for workers in Brazil who might have an excellent healthcare plan, and let's say that employee gets sick, ends up, you know, working kind of while he's still sick, so he's not as productive, and then he eventually misses work to go to the doctor. He has a good doctor through his healthcare plan. And then his doctor asks him to get some blood tests and some x-rays. And then he misses work again to get those tests. And then he misses work a third time to go back to the doctor's office with the results. Then the doctor will prescribe, you know, the best prescription drug treatment available. And then that factory floor worker goes to the pharmacy and realizes that those drugs are way too expensive and he or she's not able to purchase them. So let's say they might buy maybe the cheapest drug, if any. And then what happens, you know, that person doesn't take the drugs that the doctor prescribed, eventually ends up worsening his condition and could potentially be hospitalized. So that's a big difference. While in the U.S., you know, most of the prescription drugs are subsidized by the healthcare plans to the employers. So that was kind of the opportunity that we saw here in Brazil, was to try to spread the word and educate companies and healthcare plans that would be cheaper to subsidize the drug spend than to pay for the healthcare costs of someone who's in the hospital simply because they couldn't afford their basic drugs. And Brazil, although it's the second largest private healthcare market in the world, with about 42 million users or lives, as they say, in healthcare, still about 75% of the population uses the public healthcare system. So of the 42 million people with private healthcare, about 80% of them have their healthcare plan sponsored by their employer, and only about 20% is paid out of pocket. So in the U.S. and in Brazil, you don't have people with no insurance. They either rely on the government system, which everyone has the right to government healthcare, or they rely on the private system, which tends to be more efficient. So the universal healthcare, in a sense, exists in Brazil. However, it might not be the most efficient healthcare system, and that's why the private healthcare system developed.
So is the private healthcare system growing in Brazil?
It's been relatively flat over the last decade because it's sponsored by the private sector, that's reached about 40 million lives. So not necessarily all employers offer private health care, but the employers that have the scale or the capability to do so has kind of plateaued at this point. However, we believe that will grow as the income disparities diminish in Brazil, and there's been a lot of government actions in that sense, and also as industries continue to grow and hire more people.
Right. Shifting gears a little bit back to Lauder, how would you say Lauder helped you to get to where you are today? Or would you say that?
I think, first of all, as I mentioned earlier, I became fluent in Portuguese, and my goal was to become kind of the Latin American entrepreneur, but I didn't speak the language of the largest country in the region. So that was very important. It was also obviously very important for my first professional opportunity here in Brazil, which was working with BCG. I'd also say, in terms of gains from Lauder, the group of friends is probably what I value the most. Not only did I make friendships that will probably last a lifetime, but we are a very unique group, and we help each other as much as possible. And there's a large population of entrepreneurs within Lauder. So I remember when we were helping our business plan or doing road shows and looking for funding, I had advice, tips, and contacts provided by friends who were all over the globe, and even graduates that I didn't know personally, but I was introduced through other graduates. So that was definitely very, very, very interesting.
Networking opportunities among the Lauder community, you would say?
Yeah, without a doubt. Networking is kind of a word that I don't like to use too much because I think it's just a natural extension of your group of friends. Right. Sometimes, when a lot of people think about going to business school, they talk about the value of the network, which is obviously very valuable. But it's really, your friends have your friends are very skilled, and friends helping friends more than a business network. But it's definitely very, very valuable. And also in terms of Lauder, what would I say? You asked if it helped me get to where I am today or not. And I frequently mention it at Wharton recruiting events here in Brazil, where I try to go and represent Lauder and answer Lauder questions. I present myself as kind of the Lauder poster boy. And why do I say that? Because if I look at the last 11 years since I graduated, it's definitely has a very heavy Lauder factor. Let's say, after my immersion, as I mentioned, I did my summer internship in Brazil, accepted a full-time job in Brazil, started a company in Brazil with fellow Lauder and Wharton colleagues. Actually encouraged one of our employees at our company to apply to Lauder, and he just graduated this year from Lauder. Married a Brazilian. Our daughter was born in Brazil. So really, Lauder has had a very important role in my post-MBA life.
Yeah, wow.
Without a doubt.
Did your research that you did at Lauder sort of help you with starting a business, or?
Right. Back then, we still had a thesis, and I know that's changed somewhat with regards to the current curriculum.
Right.
But the subject of my thesis was probably – I probably picked it to kind of encourage me to confirm my desire to become an entrepreneur. I did a study on Hispanic entrepreneurs in the U.S. So, they were either immigrated to the U.S. or were born in the U.S. in his first or second generation and started companies in the U.S. And many of those companies had kind of a Latin business factor. So that was interesting and inspiring in the sense to see that, regardless of your background, there's a lot of opportunity. And even, let's say speaking about the Latin American community, as it grows in terms of representation in the U.S., it obviously generates more and more business opportunities. And my focus was always kind of not necessarily focusing on the Latin market within the U.S., but trying to see, what kind of business could be done between the U.S. and Latin America or wholly within Latin America. So it was kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. I wanted to see if Latin Americans could be successful entrepreneurs in the U.S., and I knew that they could and was able to kind of research the stories of some interesting entrepreneurs.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's probably a good way to approach a thesis.
Definitely. I didn't want to depress myself and didn't want to switch my career goals at the end of my 2 years in Philadelphia.
Yeah, right. So do you have any advice for someone who's considering Lauder, who's looking at Lauder?
Probably say three things, and there are three tips that I often give when I'm asked a similar question during Wharton and Lauder recruiting events in Sao Paulo. The first one that comes up a lot in terms of questions is regarding the workload. And I guess my advice would be don't be afraid of the workload. What my experience was that Lauder students seem to learn to prioritize their activities so well that they end up participating in more extracurricular and more social activities than regular Wharton students. I think when the world is here, you really have to be better at selecting what you focus on. And that was true for the majority of my fellow Lauder students. And we could see that, you know, we were all very active in clubs and other activities and even, you know, throwing parties and what have you in Philadelphia. So the workload is not something to be afraid of. Another piece of advice is, you know, if someone really has a serious interest in international business and other cultures, don't think twice. It's a great program. It's worth every penny. It's obviously, you know, consideration that people make because it's a second degree, so it has more tuition to be paid, but it's definitely worth it. And I'd say that it's fairly unanimous opinion of most Lauder graduates. No one really regrets having done Lauder and can only point to the positive aspects of the program. And kind of the third tip that I give people is, you know, to warn your friends and relatives that you may never come back from your country or region of focus. And that's been my case. I'd never lived in one location for more than 3 years in my life, and I've been in Sao Paulo for 11 years. Wow. So you really become committed to your region, and you might not come back. You might get married, have kids, start a business. And
you never know, yeah. You end up making a life from your work here, so.
Exactly, and what's interesting there is I'd say that Lauder, the interesting thing, why is Lauder such a tight-knit network? Besides being smaller than the overall Wharton class, I think the big thing, it's kind of a pre-selection of people who would probably become your friends. Why is that? Because everyone has similar interests. They have international curiosity. They have international business experience and maybe international personal experiences. They want to work internationally or if they're even, you know, based in the U.S. or Europe, to work with other countries. So in a sense, it kind of has many common denominators, and that's why you end up being, you know, friends with so many people within Lauder, because you really do share similar interests. That's also why that the Lauder group becomes so tight-knit.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, thank you for your time, Luis. I enjoyed our conversation, and I think people gained a lot of insight about the Lauder program.
Thank you, Edward, for inviting me to participate in this podcast. I think it's a great initiative to really kind of share the Lauder story with prospective students, and hopefully prospectives who listen to this podcast will have a few more reasons why they should be applying to Lauder and hopefully getting in and enjoying life as a Lauder alum.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Lauder Podcast. For previous episodes, you can go to our page on the iTunes Store. And for more information about the Lauder program, please visit our website at lauderinstitute.org. My name is Edward, and thanks again for listening.